Minecraft Did You Know? To craft a full set of armor, you'll need 24 items of your choice. That would be 5 for the helmet, 8 for the chest, 7 for your leggings, and 4 for your boots.
It's Friday night, and that can mean only one thing. You're tuned in to the 77th Combine's Cocktail Hour. A weekly show from your favorite Minecraft Bedrock Edition realm, the 77th Combine. We'll discuss current events on the realm, take a look at the latest news from Mojang, and have a grand old time with your favorite players from the realm. And now, your host. Don't let his tongue-tiedness fool you. He really is a semi-decent player. It's J.R. Tazel. And now, the 77th Combine's Cocktail Hour.
Thank you, Captain Monkey Feet. This is indeed the 77th Cocktail Hour for the week of August the 10th, 2018. I'm Tazel, coming in from the Tazelverse Studios. We got two people here with me to help out with the headlines. We have Ms. Grumbygat.
Hi.
As well as the Jericho Jack.
Hello, hello.
So they will definitely be, so you won't just have me here, which is quite nice. And then we have a whole bunch of other people that are going to be joining in for our normal discussion, which is going to be after our headlines. We'll be discussing game mechanics. Are they cheaty? Is it just part of the game and acceptable? Are some game mechanics okay and others aren't? We have lots and lots to talk about. But first, here are some quick items happening on the 77th Combine.
From the 77th Combine Newsroom, this is a Cocktail Hour special report.
Okay, Kat, what do we got?
All right, we have two new members that went through the application process this week. Please welcome James Lightgamer and Brayfeather66 to the realm. Additionally, we have one new hopeful in band. Check out the new user post for Derringen. I think that's how you say it. Definitely keep chatting and ask those questions so that we can make sure we are both a good fit. Next up, we have the nether beautification project that is still in effect. Let's get those nether parts off the drab nether red and into something a bit more interesting. Especially make sure to label your tunnels and portals to make navigating easier.
Yes, so I've started making my tunnel a little bit nicer. I know a lot of people have gotten a lot further than I have, but you were doing blue ice, I think it was, right?
Yes, we have an ice hallway going from spawn all the way to Korn's double spawner, hopefully, which is quite a ways away in the nether. And Haywork is helping out with that hallway.
Okay, is anyone doing Lakeshore? Because I know I go there every so often to get those blaze rods. Is anyone down that
tunnel? I'm not sure.
Okay.
I know that Spider has completed the tunnel to her base, and then also to... Spider's completed the tunnel to her base and also to the community coral reef collection area.
Gotcha.
So thank you very much to her.
Gotcha. Yes, indeed. And yes, thank you, Lola. Okay. My Peppers wants to be in the chat as well. Okay, so that's all we have for this week on the 77th Combine, but now some news from around the Minecraft world. Jack, what do we got?
All right, there was some minor updates to the Bedrock builds this week. We had a 1.5.3, includes mostly some small bug fixes, along with some player geometry things, a fix for the player inventory reset bug. They included some fixes for how to get your inventory back, so if you were affected by that, just follow the instructions that were affixed to that bug fix, and you should hopefully get all your inventory back.
Yep, and if you missed what the instructions were, you can find them right on it's in the show notes, the link to the article, but basically it's you have to sign in and it will, I guess, figure it out. I don't know. It's weird.
Voodoo magic,
yes. We only had, two or three people on our realm get affected by that?
I think we had two people.
Okay.
I thought it was only one. I don't know who the other one is.
So they should automatically be getting a magic chest arriving with the voodoo magic, as Jack was saying. let's see here. Java also got some new snapshot this week. 18W32A came out on Wednesday the 8th. It includes Dead Coral, which I'm pretty sure they already had, but sure, whatever. Along with a lot of bug fixes. If you're on Java and like to try it out, choose the Launch Options tab and select the new snapshot.
Bedrock also got new beta build 1.6.0.30. That includes mostly bug fixes, including missing mob body parts.
Yeah.
To join the beta program, you'll need to be on Xbox One, Win 10, or Android. You can sign up for the beta version over at feedback.microsoft.net. But remember, you can't play on the realms with a beta version.
Yeah, if you've seen the pictures of that bug, you just see, like, mobs with floating heads and arms and stuff, but no body, and it's very strange. Or turtles without heads, so they're just like these shells walking around.
Oh no.
Yeah, it's really, really weird. Apparently, though, they fixed it in the most recent beta there. Jack?
I got stuck on thinking about floating heads and how that would affect you mentally wanting to play. I kind of want to do that as a mod. There was an official Minecraft Xbox Live Club. Just search for the Xbox Live for Minecraft. There's an addition to the existing official Minecraft Discord group that can be found at https://discord.gg/Minecraft if you want to join that.
So
highly recommend it. Very, very useful information.
Yeah, there's the official Discord group for quite a long time, although, wow, it's hard to keep up on because there's so much content. But yeah, now there is also a official Minecraft Live Club group thing on the thing. Yeah. Let's see. Speaking of the feedback site, because a bunch of the stuff so far has been from there, Jay, that would be at Megaspud over on Twitter, is one of the Minecraft community members and they've heard the people's complaints about Bedrock mob spawning and put up a vote for improvements to be made. Check out the specifics of what they are suggesting over at the feedback link in the show notes, or search over on the feedback site, "Mob spawning needs to be more balanced on Minecraft Bedrock." Let's bring it up and vote. So, just going through some of these things, they're talking about slime should spawn more frequently in swamps and slime chunks, Enderman should spawn better in spawning platforms built in the end, Wither skeletons should be increased at fortresses, there should be a steady supply of hostile mobs around the player, making it more interesting and challenging. Let's see here. Mobs should despawn when out of range of the player, so they don't increase the mob cap. I know that we've sort of been running into that, but you have to be within a certain radius. Otherwise, mobs won't despawn. They'll just sort of get stuck in Bedrock, which kills your mob server caps. Yeah, the server as well. Hostile mobs, let's see, drowns should spawn less, be more balanced, so they don't spawn too often, hindering the spawning of other mobs. Passive mobs should spawn more. There's just a whole big laundry list of items about mob spawning that they want to try to get fixed. So definitely head over there and vote on that.
And if I may insert, I had gone over there and read through a bunch of user input. If you're going to make comments on there, don't specifically mention stuff about farms and farming mobs, because they already don't like people farming mobs, and they're not going to tailor stuff for farming mobs. So if you want any of these changes, don't tell them you're going to do it for farming mobs and make these giant awesome mob farms. Don't do it, because they're definitely not going to do it then.
Which we'll be discussing that in a little bit mobs too.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that later. Just don't do it.
Anything else over at the feedback site, Jack, that you saw?
Well, this month's Minecraft feedback topic is all about redesigning the menus and other user interfaces or UI elements in Minecraft. So if you're curious or have your own ideas of what Minecraft should look like, check out the article on Minecraft.net for all the kits you're able to download and modify. Then submit, and maybe some of your ideas will be used for when they update the interface for Minecraft. I've seen some of the stuff that they're doing over on the discord.gg/Minecraft. They have a new channel over there that's specifically for the UI, where you can submit and get your submissions pinned for review. It's pretty interesting stuff that people are coming up with for what they think their menus should look like. It's pretty cool. You should definitely check it out if you're new to the Discord.
Yeah, they did a live stream of how to do all this, over on the official Minecraft channels on Twitch, on Mixer, about, the different UIs, the paper dolls you cut out, check it out. You can find them over at twitch.tv/Minecraft and mixer.com/Minecraft. So find that stuff out there. There was also a number of creative builds, mashups, and worlds that Mojang is showcasing on their own website. This week, you can read and see about the train yard of Valley. I'm assuming that's Valley? Valley? By Greg VDD. It's a southern Belgium 1940 city that's home to elegant locomotives and steam engines. Cathedrals and castles built by Utah, from Gothic architecture to more medieval stylings. Utah has a wide range of gorgeous builds. And last, Autumn Colors by Avrine, a scenic warm scene of autumn colors as you drive along a hilly countryside. Find all those articles over at Minecraft.net. And that was the news from around Minecraft and the 77th. Okay, so that was the headlines. Now we're going to get into a little bit more of the meat and potatoes of this episode, which, as I mentioned before, is going to be game mechanics. And in addition to the voices you heard earlier, the Jericho Jack and Ms. Grumpy Cat, we are, let's see who we have here. We have Corin, we have Fled Potato, Secondhands, again, listening in, and Yomate is all there. Say hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Okay, so before we start getting to specifics, because I have a whole bunch of different things written down in the article here for us to go over the spreadsheet. What would you consider? Because I have my own definitions, but obviously this isn't just the Tazel show. What do you guys consider a game mechanic versus a glitch? Or just a normal run-of-the-mill thing, like you swipe your sword and you hit something and it breaks. Anyone want to take a stab at that?
And this is where you and I differ.
Okay. Well, that's why we're here. We're here to discuss it.
Yeah. I alluded to this earlier in chat. If it's currently coded in a way to where you can access it in vanilla, then it would be a mechanic, whether or not if it's intentional. Specifically saying slabs, we both know that a slab in Java is it allows light to pass through, even though in reality a slab would block light. That would make sense.
You mean in Bedrock? In Java, it blocks light.
Yes, that's what I'm making. Yes, you are correct. It's late, and I may have had a beverage.
I have my own beverage here as well.
Yes. So we both know that in the real world, it would block light. It's how it's working in the version we are currently playing. Whereas in Java, which is where they want the pairing, the similarities to match up with, it does not.
You have that backwards. Java blocks light, Bedrock does not block light.
Okay. Yes. Again, it's late. Yes. Those are the things. It's supposed to do it, or it's not supposed to do it, and it does it. There's supposed to be parity, and there's not.
Right.
And I feel like if regardless of the parity issue, how it's coded currently is how it should be functional.
Right. And what you're alluring to for those not deeply ingrained in our previous conversations, if you put a slab currently above a top spawnable surface, for some reason it does block the light, even though if you use a slab anywhere else, it doesn't in Bedrock. Right? That's what you're referring to?
For mob spawning, yes. Whereas in the other version, the Java, they use a different mechanic.
Well, in Java they use slabs to block light, because that's how it works in Java.
Yes.
In Bedrock, you can put a slab on the ground and have a torch underneath it, and it will light up the floor, because it's transparent. However, for some weird reason, in Bedrock, if you have a slab, if you have a bottom slab at the top spawn level, it doesn't work the same as it works everywhere else in the game, which is strange. But to get at the crux of the matter, you're saying that it doesn't matter if it's a glitch or not a glitch. If it works in the game, then it should be considered a game mechanic. There's no such thing as glitches. It either works in the game or it doesn't work in the game.
Yes, as it's currently coded, that's how it should be functional. As long as you are not doing something to cause it to do something stupid or abusive, then it's not a glitch. And however, if you were to do something to cause it to do something unintentional, then that would be the glitch. That's my opinion.
Okay. What about the rest of you guys?
Okay, so I would like to add on to that. So I'm basically in agreement that if it's coded in the game, they've put out enough patches now to fix certain things, and they haven't. So I would posit that the water squares that you get when silk touch mining underwater should be usable and not immediately to be chucked in lava, because they've got entire new versions of the game out. They've got hot fixes. They have had so many chances to fix this. Not only have they not fixed it, they've actually given it a red tinge if you then use it in the Nether. So that would imply to me that not only is it not a glitch, it's somewhat intentional. And so to that end, does that count as something that we now have to throw away? Or I know that we're not discussing rule changes necessarily, but my view is that I'm not going out and seeking these things, but I just demolished an underwater monument, which is I don't know how many gazillion blocks. And I ended up with a couple dozen of these things, and I threw them all away as I was supposed to. But, it could have been, used for something in the Nether, because, if they appeared in my inventory after a million updates, I don't really see the problem with them personally. I mean, there's following the rules, and then there's, I personally don't think it should be a rule to get rid of it.
Okay, so again, we're not trying to get into specifics, but both Jack and Corin are of the opinion that if you can do it in vanilla Minecraft, it should be considered a game mechanic, and there is no such thing as glitches. Since the game has gone through so many updates at this point that if a glitch is still there for long enough, it becomes a game mechanic.
Yeah, as long as
you're not doing something.
I don't think duping, for instance, taking advantage of lag and duplicating, diamond blocks, I think we could all agree is not ideal. But they tend to fix those pretty quickly. At least the egregious ones.
Well, they try.
Yeah, when something new pops up, inevitably, but...
Yeah, I kind of agree with the... Sorry, Corn just found like a huge entity.
Oh my god.
Seeing it on the screen. Anyway, that's giant. Anyway, yeah, I do agree with Corn and Jack for the most part. I can't believe I'm agreeing with Corn in particular, but...
Wait, somebody mark the tape. This happened once before.
So, I think that there's a lot of things that could be, for me, considered a... maybe unintentional, but also, part of the game. There's so many other games I can think of where I'm not even a gamer, and people do use, I don't want to say an exploit to advance in a game, but if it's something like duping where it's really, really, you know, ridiculously taking advantage of something, I think that's wrong. But, you know, like the water paint or something like that, I don't really have as much problem with.
Well, and maybe we're going in a completely different direction than game mechanics, because we were going to be discussing a lot of other stuff. But
well,
the fact that Nether has specifically been told, yes, you cannot use water here, I think would, whether or not they've actually fixed the glitch about the water panes.
Why did they turn the water red in the Nether? That's just interesting that they would have changed the color, because I would think that that would have to be, I have no idea how this works, so maybe that's just
glitch. That could be an environmental fact, like a variable, that everything just has a slightly reddish tint if it's in the Nether. I don't know enough about it to say one way or the other. So they may not have actually changed anything about the water per se. It's just they said, oh, well, the Nether now gives a 20% reddish hue to whatever you place down. So if you put down a crafting table, it's 20% redder than it was before, which means water would also be. I mean, this is all speculation. I don't know, but.
Well, I think, you know, so I think the topic was that intended as more like mob farms, right?
Yeah, so the idea was there's a lot of knowledge, okay, specifically knowledge. We're not talking about glitches. We're not talking about, oh, well, you know, if you put a torch under falling sand, it will break into blocks. Mm-hmm. Is that allowed or is that a glitch? We're not talking about that sort of stuff. We're talking about for those that can't see the spreadsheet and the call here, I sort of broke it down into some examples. So we have iron golem farms, chunk borders, villager breeders, fish farms in Java, because we can't do that. Mm-hmm. Slime but chunk core. Not to a point where it's useful.
Not efficiently.
Yeah, the efficiency of fish farms in Java, in Bedrock, mean that you might as well just manually do it, because an hour of manual fishing, you're going to get more items than you would overnight AFK fishing. We've done the test.
I don't get it.
You don't gain anything in Bedrock from AFK fish farming.
I am all about the farms. I'm all about the farms. I'm all about the iron golem farms, villager breeders, the slime chunk farms. I think all of those are not, I mean, you know, I know that there's some controversy about the intention of them, but I think that at this point, they're just an integral part of Minecraft. You know, I think that it's learning the game, and it's learning the game to such a, you know, intimate degree that you know these game mechanics, and I think that they are absolutely a part of the game at this point.
Well, I forget where I was listening. It may have been one of us that said it, or some podcast, or some YouTube video I watched, but the analogy they said was, it turns you from a Minecraft player and builder to a Minecraft engineer.
Yeah, totally.
I think it's a progression in the game.
So, but again, it's a matter of what, I mean, the 77's pretty strict, but even we allow iron golem farms, we allow slime chunk cords, although that was a big, long discussion. A lot of auto farms and that sort of stuff. So, yes?
Sorry.
I was like, what?
I didn't know that was that controversial, but okay.
No. That's awesome. Oh my god, I was like, what'd I do?
Sorry. Corn is enraging. He like committed blasphemy by throwing some enchanted gear off the side of the...
No. I cut a hole in the wall so I could throw something in the void, and she just happened to be watching.
Okay, hey, sorry, Jason.
It's a spike here.
Hey, Spike.
So, yeah, I mean, and XP grinders, one of our older, the ops that used to run the realm was actually against XP grinders. She thought it was, she accepted it because that was, you know, what was decided in the realm, but she thought XP grinders were actually kind of cheaty. Granted, this was before mending. She may have changed her mind after that, but it was one of those, like, it just seems, she said it just felt like cheating. So obviously everyone has slightly different opinions about different things, but maybe we can go through some of these lists here and maybe give a little bit of information. Not deep dives, We're not going to go into, well, you see, if you have the radius of 128 blocks, you have to figure in the density of the mobs outside of that within the 10-chunk border, and we're not doing that, so don't go to sleep on us here. But just sort of a high level. Yes. So let's just sort of go down some of these, and if anyone else has...
Iron Golem Farm, good. Yes,
Iron Golem Farm.
Good.
So what are sort of the game mechanics that we need to know as players that most people tend to agree are okay game mechanic knowledge? Because remember, people that may be listening here might have no idea how to make an Iron Golem Farm. Yes, they can go online on YouTube to get specifics, but just sort of the high-level information about what gets into Iron Golem Farm.
You have the four people on this realm that can probably make an Iron Golem Farm or any of these farms in their sleep on chat right now, so
yeah.
It should be a pretty good conversation.
So, you haven't said much. Why don't you sort of give the high-level instructions of what game mechanics go into an Iron Golem Farm?
The high-level basic. Yeah.
You make them within, like, 3 minutes of joining the realm.
Yeah, you make these so fast. Ridiculous. I just turn around, I start digging a hole, I turn around, and there's an Iron Golem Farm, and Yomi's at the top of it.
Yeah, you're like, look, I have a little dirt hut. Oh, wait, there's already Iron Golems. Oh, gosh darn it.
I have priorities when I start something.
They're great priorities. We love our Golem Farms.
I do what I'm good at, and I'm good at that.
Exactly.
So why don't you give just a little bit of knowledge so other people can understand? Maybe they don't even know what an Iron Golem Farm is.
So how it works?
Like, do you dig up some dirt and an Iron Golem pops up?
Yes.
You farm them. You have to water them. That's why they give flowers.
You dig out 40 blocks of iron and then kill it for 3 iron ingots. Done. It's a very efficient.
Exactly.
Very efficient.
Yes.
Okay, but in all seriousness, what goes into making an Iron Golem Farm? What mechanics do you need to understand?
One of the first things you need to understand is how are the conditions for Iron Golem to spawn, which are some amount of doors, which I don't have the exact number of.
20.
And at least...
A lot.
It's 20?
Yep.
Yeah, I think it is.
But like 38 up there anyway. And villagers, you need to start with at least 2. It will work with 2, but it moves faster the more villagers you spawn. Golem will spawn in, like, the center radius of the village that's created. Villagers seeing the doors and creating a village radius. And I guess we could call it, like, a villager aura. The concept of the Iron Golem Farm is to then... controlled area is usually the easiest to do it in the sky with villagers doors in surrounding and trap with a 4x4 hole in the middle. So was the water, the hole, well, that's about 20 blocks.
Sounds right-ish. Again, if they want specifics on how to build it, you know, well, go up this many blocks, and you know, there are YouTube videos, tons of YouTube videos online. So it sounds like the basic concepts you need to know, the game mechanics, are that a villager creates a home, which creates villages, and once a village gets to a certain population size, it can start spawning golems in the middle of said village. Which you then move and kill.
I like to pair these with villager breeders.
Yes.
Just, you know, 2 birds, 1 stone kind of thing.
It's best to start off with the breeder.
Yeah, so you start off with the breeder and then shoot them up to the iron farm.
Okay, and
rejects.
In order to have a villager breeder, you also have to have them in a village, correct?
Yes.
No. Well, yes. Well,
to create a breeder, you need a village.
A created village.
Yeah, you can make a village.
It's easy to make a artificial village.
You just really doors, you can create you can create all of this by simply having two zombie villagers and 2 golden apples and a splash potion of weakness.
Yeah, and then they get the shakes when they detox and turn back into non-rage villagers.
Yeah. We got them off the road.
Yeah. Now, these sort of game mechanics, if you trace back the knowledge far enough, came from people looking specifically at the source code of the game and figuring out how are villages created, how can a villager recognize a door, what does a door need in order to technically become a village house. All these different variables came from people looking at the source codes and figuring this stuff out. So with all that in mind, this is obviously stuff that you can't learn in game. This is not, you can't just play the game, and even with trial and error, you're not going to figure this stuff out. So with that in mind, with game mechanics, and again, just understand that I agree that most of this game knowledge stuff should be considered normal and acceptable and stuff. I'm playing the devil advocate here because everyone else is definitely on the other side. So it's with that in mind. Is it okay to use information that you literally have to tear the source code apart in order to make use of?
I believe that at some point somebody would have found a village or would have altered a village by adding enough doors to get a couple of golems to spawn and would have been mind blown and would have gained that knowledge in game without tearing through source code and would have got that naturally.
I would take that a step further. I could pretty much guarantee somebody figured out that they could make a village and golem spawn. They most likely started adding doors all over the place and didn't realize the exact number or placement, and I'm sure they just went into source code to confirm things. I mean, some of this stuff is really obvious if you just play the game and observe a little bit. So I don't know that, you know, you would need to, you know, they might not have known it was 20 doors. They might have thought it was 23 or 18 or something, but you know, most of the stuff you can find just by observing the game. You know, you don't need a source code, you know, analysis to figure out how to make a zombie farm or a skeleton farm or whatever.
Okay. Go ahead.
We watch a lot of, I don't know if this is cool or not, but we watch a lot of, like speed runs of different games.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think this is probably something that Corin would have to say, you know, because I really have very, very, very limited knowledge of this, but how do other players in other games get this in-depth knowledge? I mean, they talk about audio cues and things like that when they're going through these speedruns. Is that different, or is that...
I mean, there are games that... you know, like, so one of the speedruns I've watched recently is a Final Fantasy VII speedrun, which took something like 7.5 hours, which is just ridiculous. If you've ever played that game, you know it takes at least, you know, 70. I mean, not literally, but it takes a lot. And so, you know, I think back to when I... it's a long playthrough. And so the only way for these guys to have found the in-depth information that they use is to break down the code. Now, that being said, you know, when you first play through Final Fantasy VII, it's virtually impossible without the game's you know, strategy guide. Yep. Like, you know, and so without a strategy guide given out to you by the developers or without breaking down the code, I don't know that anybody beats that game. You're not going to know where to go in whatever village to get the wig, to get the dress, to do the whatever, to do the squats, to do that. I mean, it's just asinine in how detailed it is.
You can finish the game. It's just you're going to miss out on probably 50% of it and be really weak when you fight the bosses.
I'm okay, granted, but I don't know. I don't know. Some games, I don't know that they're possible without some of the information that... I mean, I'm talking old games, like, you know, the Nintendo, Super Nintendo kind of deal. Yeah. I mean, it would take so absurdly long to figure some of this out. I don't know that most people finish it. And since the goal was for most people that buy it to have a shot at finishing it so they don't, you know, get pissed and return it...
Well, that also gets into the... I mean, this is a much older argument, and I think one that most game developers at this point have abandoned, but there was a time period in video games where you made a video game difficult just so you could sell strategy guides.
Yes.
That doesn't seem to be the case anymore. I definitely don't think that applies to Minecraft. You can definitely fully enjoy Minecraft, get all the way, kill Gene the Dragon, you know, do end exploring without any sort of strategy guide or watching YouTube videos and such like that. Although, you know what? I don't know if you would know how to make a obsidian gateway unless someone told you. That's not the sort of thing that you accidentally do.
Yeah, and there's no, it's not like you walk through a village and there's a book that tells you how to get through the end, to the end or to the nether.
There's not even one that tells you how to make a nether portal.
Well, on,
there's not one that tells you how to make anything.
On Java, right, there is a tutorial. There is a walkthrough. Okay. I know there is, or at least it used to be, and I know there was on the Xbox edition, there was a tutorial where it walked you through, this is how you break a block, this is how you move, this is how you can get to the nether. I don't think they mentioned the end.
I definitely didn't get one of those tutorials when I was busy looking dumb.
I know it's there because my daughter used to play it on her Xbox, and there was a whole tutorial. I'm like, we don't have this in Minecraft Pocket Edition. What's all this?
Well, that's probably worth mentioning, is that those people on a computer get a lot less direction because they just assume we're going to look on YouTube, I guess.
Possibly.
I'm sure that's factored in, is, you know, people are going to look up their own information now, so why do the developers need to waste time?
Well, that's also partly why they changed... Oh, let me phrase this. That's why I believe they changed the achievements, because the achievements sort of... The achievements were made to direct you through different things. So you know, oh, I need to go kill some animals and I get food, or oh, I need to... because there is an achievement for going to the nether. And, you know, it sort of points you in those different directions. Oh, there's a dragon, apparently, I need to kill, according to this achievement. So there is breadcrumbs in the game.
What were achievements added?
To the end again, I think it's called? Spawning the dragon?
No, I'm saying when were achievements added, period? That's a fairly new addition, right?
No, that's been around for quite a while.
Couple years.
Yeah. The new version of achievements on Java is new, where you can create your own achievements and stuff like that. But the actual achievements themselves, the concept has been around for as long as I've been playing Minecraft on Pocket Edition. That's going on 3 years now.
Right.
I think that the game itself in Java is so vastly different than it is in Bedrock that it's sometimes not comparable.
Oh wait, yeah. I mean, in some ways, it's a different game, but at its heart, it's still
right.
You know.
Yeah. But I mean, there's just so many mods and things that you can do in Java that it just seems like.
Well, we're not talking about necessarily mods. We're trying to stay within the realm of vanilla, which does actually though bring us to chunk borders. So in Bedrock, there's no way for you to see chunk borders.
That's technically incorrect.
An F3 screen.
Well, yeah. There's no demo screen. You can use redstone to figure it out relatively simply.
Yes,
but it takes effort.
But there is actually keystrokes in the F3 debug screen where not only can you see what chunk you're in, but you can even bring it up on your screen.
Right, a very graphical version. Thing. Right.
I wish you had that.
Oh, God, thank you so much.
So for us Bedrock players, we have the advantage of Java, where we know that chunks exist and how they affect the way we play games. I don't think I would figure out that chunk border thing, you know, to optimize farms and other things along those lines without the knowledge of, you know, those that came before me in the Java world.
Yeah.
So in that case, yes, there is definitely a difference between Java and Bedrock, and that's not something that we could necessarily figure out without knowing, oh, specifically, oh, here, you know, 16 blocks is a chunk, done, you know, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's knowing chunk borders is sort of, and this isn't me being devil's advocate, that's sort of where I start getting, like, that's still technically game knowledge, I guess, we'll go with that, and that's okay to know, because it's division by eight, you know, and things along those lines. I know some people think that chunk border, the knowledge of where chunk borders are, is very cheaty, because it specifically was not given to us in Bedrock to know those things. And I killed everyone in the chat.
I feel like once you are in the technical realm of needing to know about chunk borders, when you start developing redstone and farming, and once you start getting concerned with chunk borders or building, you know, redstone doors and crashing realms on chunk borders, or, you know, like me getting on chunk borders and having a weird portal mismatch alignment and having a base that was on a dead chunk, or, you know, weird things that have chunk border and chunk alignment issues, then it's not cheaty. It's just vital game knowledge.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think knowledge of all of this expands usage of the game, and that's not a bad thing in any way. I mean, over the first couple of days of a new realm, it's kind of fun and challenging, but after that, it's just irritating.
Yeah, I can see that.
I probably wouldn't have, if we didn't have all these expanded knowledge base of things that we can do, I probably wouldn't have continued playing the game beyond the first couple months, to be honest.
Because you outgrew the basic concept and went into the more the engineering side of things.
Right, and I just think that it, you know, if I had to grind and grind and grind and grind and grind for every little thing that we got, so let's say we didn't use farms, we didn't use villager breeders, we didn't use any of that, you know, even all the way down to the, like, cobblestone generator or something like that, you know, I feel like I wouldn't have stuck with the game for sure. This wouldn't have been that fun for me.
Okay, then maybe I'm asking the question wrong. Is the reason why knowing game mechanics useful because it increases enjoyment of the game?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Or decreases irritation in the game, if nothing else.
I think it just is. I mean, it's still irritating to make a farm sometimes. I think
especially with block lag.
Yeah.
Oh god, don't get started on that.
I'm watching Corn fail at block leg right now. Well, he wasn't gonna go, but
yeah, luckily
it definitely keeps the interest there, right? Having that high level of,
I mean, it changes the game from being a children's game to a game for all ages, or truly for all ages.
Okay. What about some game mechanics that So, going back to fish farms, Hermitcraft this season, after having fish farms for, it's got to be over a year now, they've been aware of good fish farms for Java. Mm-hmm. Most people over in Hermitcraft have decided, you know what, fish farms are just too cheaty. They're too overpowered. It's too, yes, we understand the game mechanics. Yes, we can take advantage of it, but man, is it just sort of ruined the game. Is there a point where knowing the game mechanic can take you too far, in your opinion?
I actually would agree with banning. Fish farms I don't like, and that's kind of strange coming from me probably, but I don't really like them.
But why don't you like them? Like, what's the reason behind it? It's obviously not a game mechanic aspect, because you seem to be fairly okay with the game mechanic side of things.
I guess overpowered is probably the best way to put it. I think you said it's overpowered. Being able to set up an AFK farm on literally day one, AFK overnight, and walk out with, you know, top-tier bow, top-tier fishing rod, and you might not have diamonds yet, but you've got six mending books, a half a dozen unbreaking, protection books, sharpness, whatever. It's just, I think it's overpowered.
I think that the difference too with the AFK fish farms in particular is that those are kind of a next level of, you know, AFK advantage, where you have to actually have a mechanical, and as far as I am aware and understand how that works, it's they have to like hold down their mouse or something to keep clicking. I mean, how do they keep, isn't it where they have to have some sort of like external mechanical thing going on outside of their game?
The way most of them do it is they just literally put a marble on their keyboard and then walk away.
A marble?
Exactly.
Yeah, all you have to do is...
When I did it, I put a stapler on my spacebar and just re-keybound my spacebar is my key for
my left mouse. So my
my
point is they're using something external, like some add-on externally from literally being in the game. So it's not like they're just standing around for hours, you know, AFK. They're actually using something.
Yeah, they're literally AFK away from keyboard.
Yeah.
Well, would it make a difference if they fell asleep at the keyboard with their finger on the key?
I mean, I think the likelihood of that happening is
I think the mechanic is broken, personally. You know, the way that phishing appears to be designed, they should not be allowed. It's not that they shouldn't be allowed. It's that they keep trying to patch it, and then somebody manages to work around it. And so they appear to be trying to fix AFK phishing. Phishing is designed as a way to waste some time and maybe in an hour or two get a book or two that's useful. Not, you know, walk away and come back in 12 hours and have everything except for, yeah, six chests full of stuff.
I mean, Hermitcraft also, I mean, I love Hermitcraft. I've watched, you know, starting on their new season 6 that has just started out, them religiously so far. Like, they use the camera accounts and things like that. They use spectator mode and a lot of different things that would just not be allowed on our realm as the rule state right now because of the advantage they get with it. And I get that they have reasons that are more along the lines of being YouTube personalities that they have to, and that goes into a whole other topic of, you know, what it takes to be a YouTube person. But, you know, I just feel like as kind of the gold standard of pro players, they take advantage of vanilla pro players at that. They take advantage of a lot of things to the point where I don't know that they could be considered vanilla anymore.
Yeah, I don't consider them to be vanilla with all different modifications. I mean, now they also have a wrench and a bunch of other stuff, but game mechanics,
with the one person sleeping mod that they got,
I don't mind all that the stuff. So much, but it's, there's so much other stuff that they've added on now. Just, I mean, I still very, very, very much enjoy it. Don't get me wrong, but it's just such a, it's not the kind of, it's not straight vanilla, which is, you know, if you're going to market yourself as something, then do it, I guess.
I think with the addition of the Phantoms, they should have taken their one person sleeping and turned it off.
Yeah, I think so too.
Well, that still affects them because now only one person gets to sleep.
Well, now sleep, and that has been hilarious.
Oh, well, hilarious, you know what? Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Because,
I forgot.
Yeah, sleep is
insomnia affects one person.
That's been a really hilarious problem, actually.
Yeah, because they keep going, oh, wait, nope, there's a Phantom right there. It's killed me. Oh, yep. It killed me again. But getting back to the game mechanics of things, a couple of you have mentioned that the AFK phishing, they haven't actually fixed. And they haven't.
No, they haven't.
They haven't. As far as I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think they've actually changed any fish mechanics.
They did with the newest version.
Well, there was some timing difference that they did with some redstone that affected AFK fish farms. It wasn't the fishing itself that got affected, it was some redstone timing that changed a little bit. At least that was my understanding, because the way to fix it was to just change some of the repeater timings to make it work again. So that to me sounds more like they were just tweaking the way observers and redstone in general was behaving.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm correct about that, does that mean that it goes back away from being a glitch and just is a normal game mechanic that anyone should be able to take advantage of?
I'm still inclined to say that it's overpowered. So that's something that I, you know, based on my own argument, I would have to say that it should be allowed, but I think it's overpowered, and I wouldn't do it, and I've had opportunities to build one, and I haven't.
Well, the reason why, again, I'm talking about Java, because in Bedrock, it's not efficient the way, just because of the way water and fishing rods work in Bedrock. If they were to employ the same
mechanics where we would do it, I probably would use it if it was allowed in the realm.
You would use it?
Yeah, I would. 100%.
Well, okay, so here's the problem.
It's not meant to be an easy question.
Well,
here's the problem, and I'm with Corin. If it's something that can be done in vanilla, you know, then, you know, it should be allowed. Then blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. Here's the thing, though. Duping is easily done in vanilla, but, you know, it shouldn't be allowed because it's exploiting game mechanics. Now, AFK phishing, we already have explicit, you know, rules against being AFK for various reasons. AFK phishing is specifically against the rules based on AFK.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's the 77th specifically.
Right. Right. We're talking about personal
now, versus now, realm rules. The only reason AFK works is, you know, rebinding keys and using macros and doing things of that nature. So by definition, it's not something you can do in vanilla.
What do you mean?
No,
you
because
can kill, you can AFK.
Go ahead, Kat.
You can AFK without any of that. I don't understand.
You can't AFK fish. You're just fishing.
You're talking about fishing. Okay, I thought you were talking about just AFK.
You're not AFK farming fishing. In general. You're just fishing at that.
Okay,
point.
Well, let's be more specific then. What if I build an automatic fishing farm and I sit here at my computer and watch it? Is this abusing a game mechanic? Like, you know, fishing is clearly intended to be something that you have to give input to. And having it automatically spit out books just by watching it seems. I think that's why it feels so overpowered.
Well, by just watching it, you're not giving input. You're just watching it. Yeah, you're taking that physical interaction and you've
right. And what I'm trying to do is cut out the thought about the AFK phishing part. It's the automatic phishing I think that's overpowered. Whether you're AFK or not, having a method so that you don't have to input, you just get a machine that spits out a gajillion books and tags and fish and whatever, I think that's what's overpowered specifically.
So basically, if you were to set it up and you just hold down the mouse button and then watch some Netflix videos while you're holding down that button, you're physically holding down that button. You're not AFK. You're physically there. But it's just automatically giving you stuff without you actively doing anything.
I think that would be an issue with the coding at that point then, because then the timings would need to be changed to prevent that. Because I think, I mean, if you're sitting there doing it, then and it's part of the mechanic of the game, then it couldn't be, in my mind, considered cheating at all or anything else, because if you're actually doing it right there.
Now, for to sort of flip this whole conversation on its head, so you're saying that if you just sit there and you don't actively do anything and you reap all this reward, how is that any different than you sitting in front of an iron golem farm or a we haven't talked about it, but you know, auto villager planting farms or a pickle farm or any of these farms that you don't have to lift a single finger, do anything other than physically be in the area to make use of. Yeah, you still have to build the farm. You still have to, you know, design the AFK fishing area and whatnot. How would that? And again, I understand. I am playing devil's advocate here because I like my Iron Golem farm, and I wish it would work better.
I'm a fan of all those farms. I think I've been a fan of all the farms mentioned so far. So I think I'm going to continue that trend.
But how is that any different, Yo Mate? Yes,
say a big difference. For that would be, whereas for the fishing thing, in one night you could get almost overpowered things, whereas an iron golem farm is more like a mob or XP farm, kind of constant, but it's not...
But not quite enough constant.
Instantly get it a stack of iron blocks in the evening.
Yeah.
So if an iron golem, say, were to occasionally drop a enchanted diamond sword.
Ooh.
Would that then make the and again, this is all hypothetical, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Would that hypothetically make that then too overpowered because you're getting too much out of that? Even though the mechanics, you know, building it and the golems and everything else are the same, but instead of poppies, you get diamonds.
I would
sit at my
gold.
Iron golem farm way more.
I would say that changes nothing because
I would AFK at that golem farm so much.
Fishing, you are intended to stop off at the water. You are intended to cast out, wait for something to come out, drop the bobber. You're supposed to reel it in and get your loot.
Mm-hmm.
That is the intended purpose of fishing. Now, the intended purpose of the mechanics of all the other farms, however you may be able to manipulate and however to gain from them, however you may be able to go AFK there and get that, you're not, how am I wording this to where it's, because I'm bent over a barrel on this one. You're the AFK fishing, you're taking the action of actually clicking and doing the action, and you're removing it. I guess you could set up the farm of the golems and sit there and swing the sword.
Mm-hmm.
and hit them every single time instead of lava blading them.
Well, the reason we don't do that is because of other game mechanics that are linked to that, which is the villager breeder below.
Because it reduces your villager score.
Yes. True, but, you know, I mean, if...
Otherwise, it would be a fine XP farm, and we would use it as that, in my opinion.
You can't get XP from golems.
It'd also be a lot easier to get rid of villagers.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to point out, too, while we're talking about this whole villager-golem thing, I don't know if any of you have seen my videos on working with villagers, but none of them are short. And I'm present the whole time, unfortunately. I don't get anything by AFKing next to my villagers, unfortunately. Other than, well, Corrin's villagers you do, but not mine. Mine just sit there and stare at me. You know, we put in hours. I didn't even want to admit to how many hours of work we put into the villager farms. And so I think those are kind of a different category than what we've been talking about. They're not like the AFK type farms. They utilize the AFK time in other farms, like the vegetable farm. But then we manually have to trade with the villagers for hours and hours and build up emeralds to stock like the bookshop and things like that.
So what you're saying is, the reason why those farms, even though they're very productive, are not overpowered is to reap the benefits of it. You still have to spend the hours and hours of actually trading to make advantage of it.
I think probably that's a succinct way to put it, yeah. I mean, it takes a lot of effort to get those things functioning. It takes a lot of hours to, once you have the vegetables, to make the emeralds. It takes a lot of hours to trade all these emeralds, to get books, to get the books in the bookshelf. Not the bookshelf, the bookshop, whereas a fish farm takes 20 minutes and 12 hours AFK, and you have the exact same thing.
It's so many hours you put into the bookstore.
It's really depressing, yeah.
Which, you know, I tried to get efficiency 5, and you guys are out of stock.
We had one book as of yesterday.
I haven't been on in 2 days.
Okay.
I've been being a responsible adult and a loving husband and stuff.
That's the other thing. That for me, that is absolutely the other point, and you're joking right now, but that's absolutely the point for me, is that as adult players who have, you know, our realm is full of basically, you know, 100% adults who have full-time jobs, who have, Peon's going to go buy your book, you know, to play this game like it's a children's game. You know, I don't have time to grind for hours for things. I don't have time to do all these different things. I think that keeping the interest of adult players and having those, you know, more complex game mechanics that are not necessarily time-saving in the end, but that launch us into that pro status being able to build all these giant things, I think is extremely important for the continuation of this game and its interest to, you know, adults as well as the kids.
Sure.
Distracting.
We are much more restricted in our time, and we need to be a little bit more efficient than, say, my daughter, who during the summer, you know, is playing Minecraft in one hand while watching YouTube videos on another and playing Roblox on her computer on the third, because somehow she has three hands. I don't know. whereas the rest of us have, you know, work and stuff.
Yep. Okay. So I think that there are a lot of things that are controversial that a lot of us really, really enjoy that may not have been intended for the kid side of the game, but I think for the adult side of the game, it's just, you know, part of it now.
Okay, so just to go over some of these other items and game mechanics here, because we've been going for quite a while, even with apologies for some of the cutouts, because my GarageBand keeps stopping and saying there's audio mix match errors and other stuff, so I'll have to figure out what's going on there. But, we talked a little about chunk borders, fish farms, slime chunks. There is, a 1 in 8 chance of a chunk being a slime chunk?
Something
like that. And unlike our Java brethren, where slime chunks are matched over to whatever the seed is, you don't need to know the seed in Bedrock because it's the same everywhere. So you can open
Universal.
You can just open up a world. If you don't want to use a slime chunk finder and you want to do it the old-fashioned way, all you have to do is open up a creative flat world, see where golems are spawning, and then map out that chunk, and voila, that's where you get... slimes, and you just go there.
Golems on the brain.
Golems. Manual golems all over. Manual planting of tree and crop farms. Most of these sort of... So, tree farms you can use... observers and pistons and bone meal to you plant the tree down, and as soon as the tree grows you can use the redstone to sense and move stuff. Crop farms, in Bedrock you have the dark block function.
Not anymore, they broke it.
No, they didn't break it. In fact, Ilmango released a video yesterday on how to fix it. All it requires is a piston to move the slab in and out. That's it. The only thing they changed is you can't plant in the dark. That's all they changed. So if you move the slab out of the way, there's light and you can plant. And then the slab gets moved back, which causes it to be dark, which causes the item to pop out.
Which that's also very interesting because my testing in my own world, show that regardless of light level, it never popped out, regardless of block update or not.
Well, this is specifically Java, and those have always...
Oh, you said Bedrock. They broke that.
Yeah, so again, different rules for Java versus Bedrock.
You said Bedrock, though, I thought.
Oh, I did?
Yeah, it's cool.
Okay, so crop farm. Auto-villager planting crop farms. This relies on the brown coats. Like, yeah, you might like those a little bit.
I have one or two.
Just a few.
Or eight.
I may be asking about how to build those in a little bit here once I get my sorting system all squared away. Those require a villager to be outside of a village area.
Mm-hmm.
And a brown coat, if it sees farmland, it will try to plant if it has any seeds. And if there's a plant, and a harvestable plant, it will pick that up. And if it sees one of its brethren in need, it will try to throw them food. And again, there are some other things that used to rely on dark blocks to bring those up and harvest, but it sounds like that part's broken. Let's see, what else we got here? Mob farms! Mob farms.
My favorite.
Yeah, without... We're going to sort of leave mob farms alone for the most part, because in Java, they work beautifully. In Bedrock, they are garbage.
Well, it's important to note that the difference between garbage. A spawner-based and a passive mob farm. Passive mob farms have been jacked up forever. The spawner-based still work exceedingly well. A bunch of us have double farms, and in the kid realm that I play in, I found a triple, and it's really quite nice.
Yeah, that I grouped under XP grinders. But mob farm specifically is taking advantage of the way mobs spawn in the overworld or nether or ender, you know, end dimension or anything along those lines. And taking them to, get their drops. I have one that I built that doesn't really work all that well. It gets a lot of fish, but not so many mobs. in Bedrock, and it has to do with surface spawning versus cave spawns, and as we mentioned way earlier in this conversation, you can find a link over on feedback to have them change that, because, wow, does it not make a lot of... It makes sense, but not a lot of sense. Let's see. And then there's XP grinders, as Corin, you were talking about, where, you know, if it's... And that's pretty much the same on Bedrock and Java, I'm pretty sure, right?
The spawn area is slightly different, but yeah, the functionality is the same. Although the water mechanics recently broke mob elevators, which has been thoroughly entertaining.
True.
Just asking Miss Grumpy Cat how she broke the zombie farm over in the other Killed Realm.
Sorry.
Maybe. she accidentally locked it up, and we heard lots of zombie groaning, and there was like 300 of them sitting in there because the elevator broke. Much hilarity ensued.
Yeah, so, but they did have
a... I don't remember if I ever posted pictures of that.
I didn't post the video either. It was hilarious, though.
But that can be fixed by taking advantage of Soul Sand to shoot people up and stuff like that.
Yes.
So there's that. And then, to sort of round out the whole conversation here, something you have to be aware of, and we are painfully aware of this in Bedrock realms, but even realms like Hermitcraft, which are quite popular and large and well-managed, once you get all these sort of auto-farms and entities and items flowing around and stuff happening, you know, taking advantage to make the game as efficient for you, if you and, you know, 10 other people are all making your farms in your area is super efficient, all of a sudden the game itself can start crawling to a halt. So there's definitely a negative aspect to being very efficient in this game that we've run into.
That's definitely a problem.
If certain people log on, we're...
Kat, you okay?
I'm losing you.
What?
Yeah, you were cutting
She's
out.
She's going in and out. I'm not sure why.
Oh, sorry. Never mind.
She was agreeing with you. Corin.
Is it still breaking up?
Nope, you're okay now.
Yeah, I don't know. These headphones are terrible. I don't know who recommended them to me.
I couldn't hear you breaking up there. So, I have no idea who was recommending them to you either. Anyway, not that I'm listening. I'm using them right this very moment. Granted, I'm using a different microphone, but...
I don't even know.
Anyway, getting back to the topic about giant lag in the realm because certain people have very efficient areas. No?
Are you hinting at Lag Island?
It's not that bad.
I agree.
It's not bad now.
Yeah, you guys cleaned some stuff up. But definitely, if you have a number of highly efficient areas all together, all of a sudden, you can get quite a bit of lag. And there's also a lot of lag variables that we have no idea about. But
right, and that's the problem, is that we've cleaned up so much stuff, but then there's other people who log on, and it's immediately back to Lag Island time. And, you know, it's really hard to know what is causing it at this point.
Yeah, but that it was more just a courtesy that, you know, if you and 10 of your favorite friends are going to be there, and you're all going to have your own areas that are all super efficient and have thousands of items being created an hour, that can definitely cause some problems when you add it all up. So, something to be aware of. So, anyone have anything else before we sort of wrap this up?
Nope.
Pro Realms.
Pro Realms would be great.
I would love a server that's not built out of a potato.
Well, I would say Hermitcraft is not built out of a potato, and they still have lag issues.
I noted in chat today that after watching several of their videos and like really paying attention to the dialogue going on in their chat, that they don't. Some people edit out all the dialogue, or they turn it off, and some people just leave it all on, and you can see them talking to each other. They have a lot of the same issues that we do. So that's kind of comforting, in a way, but it's also really interesting.
Yeah, there's programs would only help us so much. It would upgrade us from a potato to a grapefruit.
I'm inclined to think. I think you can get a big enough server, a beefy enough server that you can basically keep up with it. I mean, in my opinion, I'm not sure why Hermitcraft is having such a big problem, but then again, in fairness, their farms dwarf ours.
Yeah.
Not to mention are way more efficient.
yeah. Wow. Look at the gold farms that they've made, for instance.
One snowball is all it takes to get thousands and thousands of gold.
Exactly.
Have you seen Tango's current setup?
Mm-mm.
No, not yet.
Tango made a quad version of what you have right now, Tazel.
Of what I have?
The flesh farm? The flesh farm? The platform?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's
except
got a quad.
There it works.
Yeah, there it works, and it's at a build limit, build height limit.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes advantage of... how does it work in Java?
It's build. It's top down in Java. Yeah. Whereas in Bedrock, yeah, it's bottom up.
Yeah. So it's highly efficient in its spawning.
Yeah. But, I think I did see that where he says it. Yeah. As soon as you turn it on, everything just comes to a crawl. That you can see. They say you can see the tick speed just crawl and start going really well.
It was really funny because when I was talking about when Mumbo comes online that she can tell because things just go to crap from the she just suddenly gets tons of lag whenever he comes online. So it's just kind of funny.
Yeah, and he doesn't even really have that much.
And he doesn't even have anything
right now. So yeah, I don't know if it's his computer or what, but
he's got a decent rig. I've seen his specs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, his computer's fine, but at the end of the day, the server has to move and create everything. I mean, the server has to. So your local computer renders everything, but the server is really just has to have the processing power, the horsepower to run it.
Yeah. I also think some of the problems they're having this season is that they're so close to each other where they're loading each other's chunks.
Yes, right. I think that's part of it. So, it's no longer Hermitcraft, it's Friendly Neighbor Craft.
Yeah. So, okay, so it sounds like, for the most part, we think game mechanics are good, although sometimes they are overpowered, and that's something to be aware of. Although where people think is overpowered, some people think that's good, like the cat, and some of us think that's not good, like the Corin. I'm sure you two will discuss this later. thank you for the conversation, everyone here. Thank you specifically, Ms. Grumpy Cat and Jericho Jack, for helping me out here on the specifics of the headlines. And of course, thanks to Corin, to Yomate, and I thought there was someone else in our general discussion.
Peon was in chat.
Peon was in the peanut gallery. Spike has been quiet this whole time, hiding in the background. And then, of course, anyone else over.
Can't hear me, or you're not listening.
Oh, I heard a Spike Beer. Spike Beer is really quiet.
Hear her.
Yeah, we couldn't hear you.
I said I must be really quiet because every time I've said something, no one has heard me.
Yeah, yes, I just I just increased you to 200, and now I can hear you.
Oh, I didn't put my earbuds in.
Yeah, that will make a difference. Okay. Well, you know what, Spikes? My apologies for that. You should have. I know you said hi, but I didn't realize you were actually trying to chime in and talk. Well, luckily we will have hopefully many, many more of these discussions coming in the upcoming weeks. But for now, that is going to be it for this week's episode of the 77th Cocktail Hour. And again, thank you to all of those that have helped out this week. For those not already part of the 77th Combined, but want to learn more, please check out our website at the77thcombined.com for more stories, pictures, where to watch us, and all our past season content. You can also follow us on our Twitter account at the77th Combined. Chat with us in our multiplayer Minecraft Discord group, or watch our players at the official 77th Combined YouTube channel. Links to these can be found in the show notes. We look forward to your feedback. You can email us at 77thcombinefeedback@gmail.com. We record this live weekly on Friday nights, and it's open to any member of the 77th Combined. For those of us on our live chat, we'll be continuing into the 77th After Dark voice chat. Thanks for listening, and happy crafting!